Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Cadaver Gals, where we talk about all of the ways that people have died in order to cope with our own mortality. I'm your host, Taylor, along with my beautiful and silly friends, Nika and Gabby.
Beautiful and silly. Thank you.
I love that.
Today, we're going to talk about how one poodle led to a deadly incident and the potential dangers of loving the moon a little bit too much. So today, we're going to talk about poodles being crushed, heart attacks, mercury poisoning, drowning, and alcoholism. So proceed with caution. You've been warned.
Cadaver Gals!
So, Nika, I'd love for you to take it away about Mr. Lee Bai. Is that his name?
Lee Bai.
Lee Bai and Miss Luna, a.k.a. the moon.
Aw.
Miss Luna. That's so cute.
I know. Thanks for adding my language. I so appreciate that. I feel very...
Is that like your OnlyFans name or something, I feel like?
I wish. Oh, can you imagine me with an OnlyFans? Oh, no.
Miss Luna. Miss anyway.
Luna. No, Miss Luna sounds like a dominatrix name, which also into. Okay, so Lee Bai, we're going to go back to the Tang Dynasty in China. This was like in the 700s. The story specifically is set in the year 762.
Great year.
Yeah, we're talking ancient history. And this incredible poet called Lee Bai, who was also known as, he had a few names, Li Po, Tai Bai, Wine Immortal, The Banished Transcendent. He was kind of iconic, and he was a really popular poet back then. He's kind of one of the three big ancient artists of that time. There was one who was a sword master. There was one who was a calligrapher, I believe. And there was Li Bai, our boy. So
like a sword artist who did art with swords?
No, he was just really good at swordsmanship.
Okay, I was going to be like, that's super alt. I feel like that's something that would be going on now where it's like, I have my TikTok, I'm a sword artist, look at me.
I was about to say, we all need to get into the TikTok sword master. I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure there's a sword hole in TikTok. So the Tang Dynasty was called the Golden Age of Chinese Poetry. Arts was flourishing back then. And this guy, Li Bai, he was a part of it. You know, he started writing poetry at the age of 10. And he was born to this very wealthy merchant family in the Suyab region, which is now present-day Kyrgyzstan. And that was like, that area was kind of like right in the middle of the Silk Road. So they made money. They were friends with the nobility. They were just living their lives. And so he grew up very well-read. He was very well-raised and, you know, raised in high society.
He was like a fancy boy.
Yeah, fancy art boy, which you can find anywhere in NYU. It was said, though, that it's so funny. I was reading his bio, and he, like, casually mentioned he killed some people before the age of 20 for, quote-unquote, chivalry. So, you know, different times back then.
Chivalry today is where you just open a door, but back then it was where you killed people, apparently.
Mm-hmm. For chivalry. So that's how he grew up. Now, he was kind of rebellious, though, and when he turned around 20, and obviously he had finished his studies, he was very smart, very, just like a great overall guy. This governor wanted him to take these exams to determine if he's fit for civil service or not, because they wanted to put him to work for the government, or like the nobility, basically. And he was like, absolutely not. Fuck the system. I'm leaving. And at 25,
good for him,
left his family. I know, left his family, left his home, and literally just started wandering. And he would start a lifelong romance with walking and wandering and drinking wine and making friends. Like, this was this man's life.
That sounds wonderful.
Listen, we can't do it like this anymore, and it's really sad.
I mean, there's like the travelers you see around who, you know, they had rich parents. I mean, I wonder if he got a stipend from his parents or something. Like, mom, like, I ran out of money. I'm like in the middle of this like random region of China. I need help.
That's
like,
actually
mom.
Fair that those do exist now. And they're like those white people that have wanderer in their bio and have dreads. And they say how they're so connected to the earth. But it's only because they don't have to worry about money.
Are the people who started the GoFundMe for their traveling influencing blog?
That is so lame.
Because, you know, it's what they deserve. It's what they need. But I'm going to say Lee, you know, obviously it was a different time. Different things were going on. So I'm going to commend him for his rebellion and going against the system mm-hmm. and what his parents wanted him to go into. So good for
Absolutely.
Him. I mean, even though he was 25, where you're, you know, hopefully your parents still don't have that much power over you. But also, you know, I get family is complicated.
Family is.
A lot of parents, though, don't want you to go into the arts because they're like, oh, there's no money there, right?
Exactly. So I'm actually really proud of Lee. And what I will say is he probably was funded by his parents because that's kind of how he started his wandering adventure. But he gave away a lot of his money to needy friends and just people that he met on the road. And so I'm kind of like, okay, anti-capitalist king, go off. And that's literally what he did for a long time. Made a ton of friends, lived life, wrote, experienced, partied, drank a lot. Drank a lot. I'll say that again. But it worked for him. That's like the weird thing. Have y'all ever met people that just, you don't know how they do it, but somehow things always work out for them. And they always just have like the best of luck. And they're always just going with the flow. And I'm over here in anxiety ball wondering how they do it. What's their secret? It's probably drugs, but whatever. Well, that's kind of how this guy was.
Just wandering around. Probably had strong legs, too.
Probably. You know he squatted.
For all that wandering?
We know he was fit.
I feel like we're projecting onto him. So it worked for him, and the Chinese nobility actually loved his personality and found him fascinating. Just, I guess, because he was generous. So this, like, there was this one time where he was staying at this emperor's house for a while, and the emperor loved him so much, he personally seasoned Lee's soup. Like, emperors back then were like deities. They did not do that.
He seasoned his soup with like salt?
Well, I don't know what kind of seasoning, but he seasoned his soup, which seasoning soup is very important. I mean, I don't like unseasoned
soup. Do you know more about this seasoning the soup? Is this like a specific ritual, kind of like the Paul Hollywood handshake on Bake Off? But it's like, if the emperor seasons your soup, that means something? Is that like something he would do for the special people? That's fascinating. What a specific thing.
It was incredibly rare. Well, you know, back then, classes were a big deal, right? So, like, you had the eunuchs who worked for the emperors. You had the people in the emperor's court. The emperor was obviously the highest of highest class. And so for an emperor to do something that usually eunuchs would do for Li, was incredibly rare and a big deal. And everyone in China was talking about it. It was like, you know, Bridgerton, when like the little, when Lady whatever talks
Whistledown.
About. Lady Whistledown is like, oh, and Li, please season the soup. And that's what happened. And that's the tea.
But it wasn't the tea. It was the soup.
But it wasn't the tea. It was the soup. Yes. So Chinese nobility absolutely loved him. He ended up kind of wandering, finding his way. He was a part of this group called the Six Idlers of Bamboo Brook, which was a group of six people. Some were in literature, some were in art, some were just whatever. And they literally were fully dedicated. Their lives were dedicated to literature and wine. That's all they did. All they did was drink and read.
So they were like the first book club.
Honestly, yeah. And that's how they got by. Emperors loved him and keep him on retainer and would call for him to perform in their courts. And many times he was drunk. It is noted in history that many times he was drunk, but he got by. He figured it out and he always charmed his way through it. So he continued to wander because he was exiled after offending this head eunuch at this palace that he was staying at. And so the eunuch convinced the emperor's favorite concubine to be offended by him. And the concubine told the emperor, and the emperor said, dude, I have to exile you, but here's a bunch of gold and silver on the way. That's how much they loved him.
Did they like take the seasoning out of his soup after that? They're like, nope, no more seasoning for you.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
They strained the soup. But he took his time going to his place of exile, just like walking around, meeting friends, making new friends, like the whole thing. So he was on his way to the island that he was going to be exiled at. It took him so long that he was actually pardoned, like, while he was halfway there. Like, yeah, but hadn't even got there. And the emperor was like, you know what? We're going to pardon Li because he's just that great of a guy. By then, he had written like 1,000 poems. Obviously, time passed. He continued to perform for nobility. By then, he was around 61 when this other emperor decided to give him a high-ranking position in a palace. And Li was somewhere off in a faraway town. And so they sent a messenger to go find him to tell him. But when the messenger got to the little town, they found out that Li was dead.
What happened?
Well, there's a few stories. Many think that he died of natural causes. He was a drunk, an alcoholic, you know, and he was oldish, 61, so yeah, for that understandable. Time. Yeah. However, I have two other stories that are much more fun, and also, like, I want him to die in an iconic way because he was iconic. Some say that he also died from mercury poisoning for drinking too many Taoist life elixirs. Those elixirs back then had mercury in them, and though they were thought to up your life expectancy, as we all know, mercury does not do that. So, that could have been a way that he died. But there's also this legend and the village folk that the messenger went to basically be like, hey, where's Lee? And they were like, he's dead. Told him this. Apparently, he went out on a boat ride like at midnight. He loved walking during nighttime. He just like would stroll around all the time and go to the lakes and go to the boats. And he had many poems talking about how much he loved nature and how much he loved the moon and all that sort of stuff. And so he decided to go on a boat ride at night. And listen, I get it. Like, I understand, because one time my friend and I were on drugs and literally looked up at the moon. It was a full moon. We're staring at the moon for like 3 hours. I'm not kidding. And we decided to call it Moon TV. And we had a friend who had left to go on a date like around the time that we started Moon TV, and he came back with his date, and we were in the exact same position, horizontal, staring at the moon. Pupils dilated, baby. And it was a fun time. So I do resonate with Lee on that end.
The moon is beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, the moon's hot. And also, it's like back then they didn't have TV. So actually, the moon was the TV. So, you know, it was just like the slowest TV where you're like, oh, it's getting slightly bigger. Oh, it's getting slightly smaller. Oop. It's gone.
The moon is enthralling. I mean, really, drugs or no drugs, y'all need to look at the moon tonight. give her proper credit. So he went out on this lake and was drunk and was, you know, looking at the water, looking at the moon. And then he saw the way the moonlight reflected onto the lake. And it is said that he loved the moon so much and loved the light that was coming from the moon so much, he wanted to be enveloped in it, wanted to touch it. And so he lunged himself out of his boat into the moonlight and drowned.
Or he was absorbed by the moon.
I want to believe that. I want to believe that. Maybe he's on the moon right now, writing poems.
Maybe he's the man in the moon.
Maybe all of the moon conspirators that think the moon isn't real are going to be like, actually.
What kind of boat was he in? Was he just like in a little rowboat?
A pontoon boat.
Yeah. Like, I mean, presumably he was alone. So it had to have been like a self-rowing boat of some kind.
Nah, I bet his life was so good that he could, like, the water somehow would just, like, guide him out on his boat. He just stepped on it and just, like, floated out there in a perfect sort of way.
Well, honestly, I don't think that those two scenarios are mutually exclusive, right? Because if he had had too many life elixirs and had so much mercury, the mercury poisoning could have then made him hallucinate a little bit and see the moon and kind of like in the reflection as like a different way, seeing that in a way that would just, you know, make him become more infatuated with it. And then that's why he then dove in. And then also with mercury poisoning, you kind of lose like sensations and stuff.
Oh, so, okay. And
muscle weaknesses. So muscle weakness.
Well, I did not know that. Yes, it could be connected. Who knows? Also, he was a poet, you know. I can understand a poet be like, ah, the moon is so beautiful. I will now be enveloped by it and then die. Poets have been known to be, I mean, Gabby, you're a poet. You're a little dramatic.
I mean, I also feel like there's probably a lot of pressure as a poet to die in a poetic fashion.
Yes.
You know, you kind of gotta. Like, overdosing drugs, that seems to be like a lot of poets. And also being absorbed by the moon. I'm sure there's multiple poets who have died that way. So
I think that's a good way to go.
I feel a lot of pressure to have a beautiful death. So I'm still thinking it through, though.
Okay, good. Yeah. Take your time.
Do you have a poem that you could read to us?
Well, Taylor, considering you know this from the outline I sent you, yes, I do have a poem. Well, he wrote a lot about the beauty of nature, about the beauty of simplicity, all of that sort of just like very simple life. Like, he was a simple man despite loving to party and loving to get drunk. He loves nature more than anything. And so that's what a lot of his poems were about. And I'm going to read one that I just found super relatable. Are y'all ready? It's called Waking from Drunkenness on a Spring Day.
Oh, I can already tell I'm going to relate.
Right?
It goes like this. I feel like shit. God damn it. Why did I drink so much last night? I'm never drinking again. Fuck, but I know I will. God damn it. Okay, but anyway, let's
honestly
hear it.
I will say, like, I don't know. This just gave me flashbacks to the last time that I was very drunk. And do you guys ever get, like, very drunk that you kind of look up at God and you're like, God, please take this away from me. Like, I promise I won't drink again. Like, that's kind of how bad it was. And that's how I feel like he felt in this moment. So let me take you back there. Waking from Drunkenness on a Spring Day by Li Bai. Life in the world is but a big dream. I will not spoil it by any labor or care. So saying, I was drunk all the day, lying helpless at the porch in front of my door. When I awoke, I blinked at the garden lawn. A lonely bird was singing amid the flowers. I asked myself, had the day been wet or fine? The spring wind was telling the mango bird. Moved by its song, I soon began to sigh, and as wine was there, I filled my own cup. Wildly singing, I waited for the moon to rise. When my song was over, all my senses had gone.
Wow.
Snaps for him.
All right, well, with that, we will be right back. Welcome back. We're going to talk a little bit about mercury poisoning and what exactly was in those life elixirs that may have, in fact, ended Li Bai's life.
Well, thank you for coming to my channel. In order for you to make a Taoist life elixir. No, well, the most common ingredients, at least the historians have found, are mercury or cinnabar, which is like a bright red mercury mineral deposit, some honey, some sulfur, some copper, and hot water. And that is what you would do to create Taoist life elixirs, basically.
So it sounds like they were like, all right, let's go to the periodic table and see what we can consume of this.
Well, it seems so. Life elixirs originated supposedly in Mesopotamia. It's like the first time that a life elixir is mentioned. And then I know that in ancient China, the thought process was to consume precious stones or metals because their longevity would translate into our bodies for more longevity. So, like, that's where they created drinkable gold, or they would sometimes also swallow jade, cinnabar, which is that mercury substance that I mentioned, other just like precious stones. And I mean, I get it. Like, you know, there wasn't a lot of information back then. So I can understand why you would think, okay, well, if I consume this, then their properties are going to come spread into my body. But a lot of people died like that. This emperor, the 12th of the Ming dynasty called Jia Jing, died of mercury poisoning. And he was, I think, the first recorded mercury poisoning because of the life elixir's death.
So did it make you like feel drunk? Was it kind of like a, was it like that?
Well, it was mostly, it was just so that way the stone's properties would translate into our bodies, basically. Some did have effects. Like, there was this mushroom that ancient Chinese medicine would use that they still use now that would cause those effects and was used for like healing and stuff. No one's tried it, so I can't say if it felt drunk or not.
Well, yes, visit cadavergals.com/mercury drink for your new favorite weekend cocktail.
Well, don't drink mercury because it's really bad for you. Like, I did, as we all probably know, hopefully. But, you know, mercury actually exists in a few things that, like, and so like medications and stuff, which is used to, as like a diuretic or like, it's essentially used to like kill stuff in your body. So that makes sense if you consume too much that it would then kill you.
Mercury really wasn't seen as super toxic until recently, right? And I only asked that because my mom in Colombia broke a thermometer once and was found playing with the mercury with her sister. And, like, her dad didn't know any better. And then when her mom found them, was like, get away from that, you know. But even then, it's like, it wasn't seen as, like, super toxic.
Yeah,
she's
it was
okay,
a little bit more recently. Thank God. Yeah. Mercury poisoning. So what it does is, like, you can get mercury from, like, vapor by ingesting, obviously, an injection. But it literally can be absorbed through your skin as well. So that's kind of why it's so dangerous. But what it does is it affects your neurologic, gastrointestinal, and renal organ systems. So, like, kind of what it does is it, like, It affects like your motor skills, like how like you kind of get a muscle weakness.
Sounds like you wouldn't be able to take a dump.
It sounds like you would.
Or
like,
does it make the dump happen faster?
Well, there is a little bit of mercury in like diuretics.
Well, that would be a better option than from the last episode when we talked about the guy who stuck the eel up his butt. I mean, I'd probably rather have mercury than eel. So, interesting. Okay.
I don't know. The guy got out in 7 days. Mercury could really mess you up for life. So.
Well, yeah, I read that one long-term effect of mercury was decreased intelligence. And I was like, maybe I've been poisoned with mercury anyway.
No, actually, Gabby, it's really funny. One of like the early stages and early signs was like anxiety, depression. And I'm like, all these things. I'm just like, oh, shoot, do I have mercury poisoning?
That's the problem with our generation. We've consumed too much mercury somehow.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to Lee Bai a little bit. The other thing that mercury does is it causes like hallucinations and kind of like hysteria, which if you've ever heard of Mad Hatter's disease, that's basically mercury poisoning. So where that comes from is there's way back when all the fancy people were wearing top hats and, you know, all the fancy hats and stuff.
All the dandies.
Oh, yeah.
So like 2006.
Right.
The hipsters. Okay. Right. I'm there.
So what they would do is like the fanciest of fancy, those hats were made out of like beaver skin or beaver fur. And so in order to separate the fur from the hide, they would use this mixture. And but basically it had mercury in it. So if you worked at one of these hatteries or even in the city nearby, they would all have mercury poisoning and they were all kind of crazy. And so when they say you must be mad as a hatter, it's because they would have mercury poisoning.
That's probably why all the guys in Bridgerton were acting like so dumb. They just all had Mad Hatter disease.
I mean, yeah. So basically, it was very common to have Mad Hatter's disease or have mercury poisoning. So I feel like it was very plausible that Mr. Lee Bai was just hallucinating and just fell in love with the moon and the reflection and was just infatuated with all of the colors and lighting and reflection. And he was just like, I'm gonna take it all in.
Understandable.
Also, I wonder if like the Mad Hatter, like, was he serving Alice mercury tea in that documentary story, Alice in Wonderland? Oh, God.
Right, yeah.
Because, I mean, they reference, like, weed and mushrooms and stuff in Alice in Wonderland, but then also the mercury hallucinate. Wow. Everything makes you hallucinate.
Yep, there you go.
This is a hallucination right now.
Yeah, right now. This isn't even a real show. Yep.
Now that we know we're all crazy and this is a hallucination, I'd like to hear from you, Gabby, and how this poodle caused such a debacle.
Yeah, I feel like this story that I'm about to tell is kind of like a hallucination because it's so bizarre. And I think I came across this like 6 months ago, and every week I think about it. So this is the story about a poodle. And no, I do not know if it was a standard poodle. I don't know if it was a miniature poodle or a toy poodle. But it was a poodle.
Standard poodles are pretty big. I'm just going to say that. I don't know why I just said
that.
Yeah,
they're continue. Standard. They can get up to 70 pounds. Oh my God, should I do some fun facts about poodles to expand this story so we know some like useless information? Let's do it.
I love poodles personally. I think they're cute.
Yeah, I looked at a lot of pictures of poodles and there's so many different, the clippings that they do are so ridiculous, but they actually have a reason of why they cut the poodle's hair like that. I mean, not sillily as they do now in dog shows, but basically poodles come from Germany. They believe that the first poodles were in Germany, even though Germany and France had this kind of tete-a-tete where they're like, ah, no, we came up with the poodle. Or they're like, oh, no, we came up with the poodle. And the Germans were like, no, we came up. I don't know Germans talk. I'm sorry. But poodle actually is a German word or derivative from a German word that means splashing in the water. So poodles were originally hunters for duck hunting, which is really funny for me to think about like a fancy poodle like going to go duck hunting. But they also have soft mouths. So after you would shoot the duck, they could gently carry the dead duck. So your soft mouth dogs. Yeah, so sweet. But the reason that they actually started cutting the poodle's hair like that is because poodle hair doesn't shed very much. So you have to constantly groom them to make sure that they don't have too much hair. And so when they would jump in the water, sometimes their fur would be too heavy. So they just started clipping off the bottom parts of poodles so that they would still have the warmth to protect their like main organs and their face and all that. But then they would shave off the legs So they're just like wearing a little shirt, basically.
That's amazing.
That's cute. I love that.
It's actually kind of funny because it was the French who then kind of, they made them less hunting dogs and more domesticated dogs that were just sort of inside your house as a status symbol. And then after they made poodles, they started making all of these shoot-off breeds so they could just have little fancy dogs. And I know that Nika hates one particular
Don't
poodle.
Even get me started. Don't even, I'm starting. Listen.
I don't understand.
Taylor.
So I can't.
Labradoodles are a mix between poodles and Labradors. And they literally look like humans inside of a dog suit. Have you ever seen their dead eyes? Have you ever seen how big they are? They're so big for no reason. They look like a Muppet. I cannot with them. Also, and I will always quote this, I have said this many a time. This is kind of my party conversation trick. I just start bringing up Labradoodles. The creator of Labradoodles, the guy that literally mixed the genetics, has been quoted in saying that he regrets his creation. So I don't know what to tell y'all. I think it's an abomination.
That's what my mom says too about me. That's crazy.
Stop. I mean, you guys are both cat people, so I just don't know what to. I just don't know what to do with that, because I think poodles, labradoodles, all dogs are the most greatest thing to ever hit the planet. So
Taylor, you're gonna tell me that if a labradoodle was coming at you, running, dead,
I'd lay down.
You wouldn't be scared.
Lay down.
You wouldn't be scared.
Oh no, I'd lay down.
You're like, look at this cute hyperallergenic dog. That's so nice.
I can't. Okay. Anyway, continue, Gabby. And if anyone wants to fight me, y'all can fight me in the comments.
Yeah. I think if this is for the people who have listened to all of our episodes, this will be kind of the inside jokes of the podcast. It's always going to go back to Labradoodle. So you know what? You're an insider now. We're talking about Labradoodle.
You're an insider whether you like it or not.
So this poodle in question was named Kashi, and Kashi was the dog of the Montoya family in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Okay. So this family, they lived on the 13th floor of their apartment building, which already is foreboding
already
as hell. But that's actually more of kind of just an American thing where we're always like, oh, the 13th floor is scary. So, and that's also like the Omni hotel business apparently standardized that, where most hotels, it's like 85% of hotels don't have a 13th floor or something.
Yeah.
Crazy town. We're all so suspicious here, and look what it's led to.
Suspicious or superstitious or both?
We're just all of them. We're a combination.
We're stitious.
Anyway, so they were kind of living in the downtown of the city, and this, it's like busy, trafficy streets, a lot of people walking by on the sidewalks. And it was a beautiful spring night on October 21st, 1988, because remember, the seasons are reversed south of the equator. And Kashi the poodle was out on the Montoya's family's 13th floor balcony, and then suddenly he fell off the balcony. Whether he jumped, he fell, we don't know. So he fell down the 13 floors, and when he reached the bottom, he fell on top of a 75-year-old woman named Marta Espina on her head, and they both died instantly.
That's really intense.
And then what happened is a crowd began to gather around the scene. And then there are so many people who are sort of spectating this horrific thing that happened that the crowd started to spill onto the street. And one of the bystanders was this woman named Edith Sola. She was 45 years old. She was on the edge of the crowd, and suddenly she stepped back. She was in the street, and she got hit by a bus, and then she also died. And then
It keeps going.
It keeps going. And then there was a man down the street who had witnessed all of these deaths, the poodle falling on top of the woman and the other woman getting hit by a bus, and he had a heart attack and he died on his way to the hospital.
Can you just like imagine seeing this horrific like chain of events?
This is like two birds with one stone, except it's three people with one poodle.
Yep, that's the new expression. Three people, you know, hit one poodle, three people.
So efficient. That's terrible. Anyway. I'm so sorry. That is really, really bad.
So this seemingly small, this was an absolutely bonkers thing to happen. And there's really just like, there's not much you can take away, except it's like a crazy accident that happened. But it ended up being printed on the front cover of Argentinian newspapers across the country. And then it got picked up by Reuters and then was shared internationally. So a lot of people saw this story. in one of the original newspaper articles, a neighbor was quoted as saying, "We are all extremely sad. We cannot understand how this could have happened. Just imagine how the Montoya family feels about it." And the thing is, we must imagine it because I couldn't find a comment made by the family, but I think it's safe to say that they probably felt like shit.
Yeah, they lost their dog. And then was the cause, their dog was the cause of three other deaths. That's a lot to live with. That would be a lot to have to live with.
Yeah. And I mean, so I was kind of wondering, like, with dogs and balconies, because I was thinking about my mom's dog, and my mom's dog is kind of, I always joke that he's a little suicidal because whenever a car drives by, when he's on a walk, he like tries to run into the car. And so
was he like attacking the wheels?
It might be that. I don't know. I think he's also just kind of stupid. But so I was trying to think about like, why would a dog jump off a balcony? And so I went down this sort of rabbit hole of the rabbit hole to Alice in Wonderland.
The white rabbit hole.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just kind of like, you know, why did this dog jump off the balcony? And I was like, do dogs commit suicide? Was this a sad poodle? Because I was thinking about that movie Best in Show as well, where there's like the sad Weimaraner. But apparently dogs and animals can't really commit suicide because they do not understand death. So
that makes sense.
But it's, I don't know, there's all these like random bizarre incidences. Like there was in 1845, there is a story in a London newspaper about this black dog that a lot of bystanders saw intentionally. It looked like it was intentionally trying to drown itself. Like it kept putting its head underwater and then eventually died. And then there's also this bridge in Scotland, the Overton Bridge, where 50 dogs have jumped over the edge of the bridge.
50?
Yeah, 50 dogs.
Oh my gosh.
They haven't really been able to explain why, but they, I mean, there's obviously the superstitious idea, but then there's also some people think that there's like groups of mink that live near the bridge. So just like rodents that maybe they're smelling.
I was going to say there needs to be something that is like pushing them to do that. And I don't think it's, you know, oh, this bridge.
There's probably some like smell or sound or like animal that like has them doing all the same thing. Because dogs are pretty much all the same. They all do similar things.
Wow, Taylor, that's really rude of you to generalize about dogs.
They're all amazing.
And they all do the same thing, which is jump over this one specific bridge.
Which is be amazing. They do one thing, and that is that they are amazing.
But it seemed like for a while that people were trying to say that, you know, animals can feel emotion, they can feel anxiety, depression, etc. But because they cannot actually conceptualize death, you can't ever say that they're actually intentionally committing suicide. But sometimes they do have self-destructive behaviors. And so I was trying to think about like this dog. What I was thinking, maybe what motivated this dog was apparently the Montoyas had recently like redone their balcony. And so maybe like either the balcony was shittily made or like there was something different because the dog used to hang out on the balcony all the time. And then it just, or maybe something passed by. I don't know. But then it just jumped.
You know, sometimes it can just be like a big sound or something that scares them and makes them jump and then they fall. I mean, I have a cat and I love him, but he is not the most graceful baby at times. And cats are supposed to be super graceful. And sometimes he just misses. Maybe that's what happened.
There are those moments where dogs, cats too, they just get that moment where they're like super, super excited and they just like run around. People call it the zoomies, which I kind of hate that term.
The zoomies.
I'll let y'all decide on that. The zoomies is what it's called. My dog will do that where he just like runs around and he'll like ping pong off of stuff. So like, and then just get clumsy and they don't realize their size if it was like a bigger one or something and then could have accidentally fallen off or jumped off or like misinterpreted how the balcony was or something. I could see that happening, I guess.
And though apparently, I mean, it's definitely more likely for cats to fall off of balconies, and that's happened so much that there's actually a syndrome that's been created for it called high-rise syndrome. But usually cats are more likely than dogs to survive because they have kind of more fluidity in their bodies and they can land easily.
They land on their feet.
Yeah. you know, for my own I don't know, weird interest. I was trying to figure out like what, you know, what kind of poodle Kashi was, and seeing if, because it was 13 stories up and that's about 130 feet to 150 feet. And it was, I actually found this, there's this organization called DROPS, which is basically like a global task force that's trying to prevent things from being dropped, mostly at construction sites. And they have this meter of, you know, how likely it is, like how likely a fatality is based on the weight of something being dropped. But basically, no matter the size of a poodle, a toy poodle, a miniature poodle, or a standard poodle, basically anything above 0.1 pounds at 130 feet will lead to fatality. So I guess basically make sure you watch out for things falling, especially poodles.
All right. We will be right back. Welcome back to Cadaver Gals. We just heard from Gabby about how a poodle fell from the sky, which got me kind of thinking about where, about raining cats and dogs and kind of where that came from. So basically, there are these two theories. Nobody they don't really know, but there are two reasons why they think this phrase came about. One of which is where cats and dogs used to kind of like snuggle on like the overhang of houses back in like the Victorian times or whatever. And then when it would rain really hard, they would obviously kind of get like washed down and then they would fall. So obviously cats and dogs would kind of like fall from off the roofs. So that's one thing. And then the other reason, basically, they didn't have great draining systems, obviously, back in the day. And so the streets would get flooded when it would rain a lot. And, you know, there are a lot of like stray cats and dogs or people, you know, they weren't staying and snuggling inside like we thought, you know, like we do now. So a lot of these dogs and cats, they would kind of flood and they would drown. And then the next day, kind of when the water would recede, there would be just like an influx of cats and dogs. And so they would just, you know, it rained and then there were cats and dogs. So there you go.
So either way, the origin is very depressing.
It's very depressing. Comes from rain. Keep your dogs and cats inside if and when possible.
So I guess most likely your dogs won't be sleeping on the roof.
Right. I was like, there's no way that my dog could be on the roof.
Gus isn't the most industrious dog there is.
Gus could never. He just wants to be snuggled and loved. That's okay. I feel that.
Okay, so basically there are other animals that do fall from the sky, and most commonly are fish and frogs. But this is because of like heavy winds or tornadoes. So there's actually this phenomenon in Honduras that is called, Nika, you'll have to say it for me because I can't.
Lluvia de peces.
Which means basically raining fish, right?
Yeah, fish rain, raining fish.
So apparently about every year in May or June, there's like a massive amount of fish that are found everywhere. And they're actually fish that are native to an area that's about 125 miles away. So really the likely scenario here that's going on are water sprouts, which are just like little tornadoes over the water, which then carry fish and they carry them away. And so this happens about once or sometimes twice a year in this town of Yaro.
But fewer fatalities, I imagine, of a fish sort of like slapping in the face maybe as opposed to falling on you from a tall building.
Right. So there's no record that I've seen of anybody dying from this besides the fish.
Well, yes.
But often the fish are still alive, like flopping around.
Can you imagine?
And this has happened in other areas too. It's not very common, but with those same water sprouts, they can also pick up jellyfish and little alligators. Can y'all just imagine being like going your merry way and then a jellyfish falls from the sky and like hits you in the face?
From the creators of Sharknado, yeah. Jellyfish rain. Yeah.
Or a tiny little alligator. That would be so scary.
I don't know. I think tiny alligators are kind of cute. Yeah, I feel like jellyfish and I have a little bit of a spiritual bond because one time recently I was in the ocean and one was next to me and I said, excuse me, let me get out of your way. And I booked it to the sand. So ever since then, I don't know, the thought of a jellyfish coming down from the sky to slap me in the face is not as terrifying anymore.
Okay.
But you got out of that jellyfish's way, so I feel like you're even. You know, I feel like the jellyfish shouldn't be coming after you.
You know what it might do? It might fall from... I've said this many times on this podcast. I just want things to kiss me. I want the jellyfish to fall from the sky and give me a little kiss on the forehead.
It'd be like a little sting.
A rash.
Yeah.
Okay.
Followed by...
Yeah, you'd get a little
an aggressive...
Rash. Someone have to pee on your forehead.
Exactly. But yeah, so basically tornadoes can just like slurp up a whole pond and then everything in there can be like taken away and moved. And then the tornado's like, okay, I'm done. And then just drops everything, right? Pretty sure that's exactly how that goes.
That is exactly how tornadoes happen.
So I really hope there's not like in Honduras, there's not also like a pond filled with poodles. That would be scary. They slurped up all the poodles.
The name for that would be so cool though. The poodle pond. I love alliteration.
We're going down to Poodle Pond.
So there's another weird incident of showering of random things. In 1876, we're going back to Kentucky, and there were these just a bunch of hunks of meat that were falling from the sky. They were like 5 by 5 centimeters. Yep, there were these like chunks of meat.
A vegan's nightmare.
And a couple of men were like, like people were like, what is this? And these guys were like, I know, we'll just try it and see what it tastes like. So I know what you're thinking. You're probably like, oh, they probably died or something.
I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I love eating meat from the sky. Sky meat.
Sky meat.
From the creators of Poodle Pond comes sky meat.
Right. So they basically, they would just like, they argued whether it was venison or mutton. They were like, no, it's, which I think is just hysterical.
But they did not die. Well, they died eventually. It's 1876, eventually. But they didn't die from food poisoning.
Not from this, no.
No, they're still alive because they ate those cubes, those magical cubes
That's
of meat.
The elixir of immortality, actually. It was the meat that fell from the sky.
Yeah. So they still don't really know exactly what it was, but some say it was cyanobacteria, anyway. So that was one. Others were convinced that it was parts of an animal or animal lungs or even human. But the other theory, which I found most interesting, and Nika, I've got some alliteration for you. It was either vulture vomit or buzzard barf, because what they do is they're like, they need to fly. They need to like rid themselves of some of their, like make themselves a little bit lighter. So they then throw up while they're flying or they're about to take off. So that's something you can be on the lookout for.
Have you guys ever been near a vulture, like seen a vulture in person?
Not really. I don't think so.
Yeah. I hang out with them. I fly around.
Gabby's like all my friends.
Just waiting for people to die.
I remember I went to this bird show once when I was like a teenager. We went to this random bird show in this nature sanctuary somewhere in Georgia, Alabama. I do not know. Tennessee. I do not know. Cursed
the South
place.
Though.
Yeah, the South. Just picture that. Me and my Colombian family just like sitting in this bird show with a bunch of, you know, whatever. And they had a vulture come out and they paraded the vulture around and it like flew. It was like injured. It was like a place for injured animals. But it flew right on top of us. That thing is massive and also terrifying. Terrifying. It's like its neck and its fur is just – I mean, not its fur. Its little feathers is just so gross and I am not a fan. I just, they're so big and they're much, and the way they walk is basically like jumping. And the sound they make with their talons when they jump is terrifying, really. So
they're your favorite animal?
Yes, naturally.
They're so scary and I love them. That's like what people say about my internet content.
Which do you like better, labradoodles or vultures?
Oh, I would take a vulture over a labradoodle. I'm not kidding.
I also, Taylor, I do want to commend your use of alliteration with the vulture vomit and buzzard barf. If Levi was still here today, that would be a beautiful alliteration mm-hmm. for one of his poems.
Oh, Taylor, can you improv us a poem to send us off about
not
vulture vomit?
I really can't.
I'll try.
That is not my MO.
I'll try. Vulture vomit.
Cannot stop it. Put it in your mouth. Buzzard barf. Ow. It fell on me.
Ow, it fell on me. Yeah.
Sorry, I have to go back. Can you imagine, though, if it was vulture vomit, then these guys were, like, eating vulture vomit, which is essentially they're eating raw meat that had already been ingested by a vulture and then spit back out. That is disgusting.
Well, maybe it was safer because part of it was digested. Yeah, maybe the acids, you know, helped. Yeah, maybe it's like a delicacy. It's like, this is some venison from inside.
They did say that it was a vulture.
Oh.
That was a note. Vulture vomit.
Yeah.
Put it in your pocket. Venison fresh. Oh, so yummy.
I was just going to suggest that we all keep our day jobs. I would like to challenge everyone to drink a little bit tonight, have a little glass of wine, look at the moon, and write a poem. And feel free to submit your poems to us.
Oh, yeah. We'll post them on Instagram. Love to read those. For real. I love that. We should all do it, too.
Yeah, and then we can make it a competition, and then I have to win.
This arbitrary competition that we are creating right now.
We'll give away one poodle.
All right. Well, thank you, ladies, for your wonderful, wonderful stories. This has been another episode of Cadaver Gals.
Say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Cadaver Gals.
Cadaver Gals is a production of School of Humans and iHeartRadio. It is hosted, produced, mixed, researched, etc. by Taylor Church, Gabby Watts, Nika Duarte. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Cadaver Gals.